co-op Wolfenstein guys.
Yeah. That'll be bonkers, man.
I'm going to hire the kid next door to spray me and my wife with ketchup as we play this game. We'll just sit there.
Welcome to Rated NA, the podcast for the website nerdappropriate.com. And I'm your host, Matt.
And I'm Scott.
And I'm
Whoa! We're all here!
Yeah, how about that?
It's amazing. Scott has returned. Welcome back, buddy. You were missed.
Hey, thanks.
Yeah. Even though we teased you incessantly on the show every time you were gone.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I listen to everything that you guys do.
Well, welcome back.
None of it escapes me. Thanks.
Welcome back.
Yeah.
Welcome back, like Mr. Cotter.
Yeah. This is a good time to be here because we've got E3 2018 to talk about, which is super exciting.
It's true.
I feel like this was the E3 to not miss, and I'm totally missing it. So I have intense, intense E3 FOMO right now.
Oh, really?
I feel like this is the first E3 that I watched that you guys didn't watch.
Well,
I watched.
I watched most of it.
Yeah. I saw Microsoft and Nintendo and Ubisoft and some of EA.
Yeah.
Didn't see PC. I heard about Sony. I don't know. And I didn't watch the PC game show. So I think that's it.
I watched most
of
them.
I did not watch PC either. I missed that one. And then I'm bummed I did because I saw later something that got announced that was interesting looking. So.
Oh, cool.
So good stuff. So, Scott, what's going to be on the show this week?
Well, this week on the show, we're going to talk about E3 2018, and I don't know if we're going to have time for anything else, but if we do, I have something to talk about. But if not, we'll do it next week.
Cool. That sounds cool. It sounds like we may have to. We had a question of the week as well on our social media about E3, but we got a lot of responses, so maybe we'll just save it for another episode, because I know we're going to be jam-packed in this one, so we'll see.
Hey, you know where I didn't see the question of the week?
Where?
In the show notes.
That's another reason why we'll probably save it for next week.
Oh, sounds good.
Way to call me out, Scott.
Yeah, no problem. Okay, let's dive right in. Where do we start? I think Microsoft was the first to go. Am I right?
Well, let's do that. Let's start with Microsoft.
Sure.
Or maybe
EA was the first one to go. Yeah.
Oh, yes. Yeah. EA. EA's not in here.
He's not in the notes.
Oh. Ash is like, I put everything in the show notes.
I did not say that. I said they need to be filled out. So let's pause for 1 second.
No. I got it right here. I'll just drop it right in. Everything's okay. Yep. Yay. There you go. And a paste for you.
Wonderful.
Yeah. There we go. Cool. A lot of, obviously, Battlefield 5 was the big game that came out of that. You know, a lot of the reveal of that was done by Trevor Noah on a previous event, if you will.
Yeah.
Did you guys happen to catch that event? P.S.
I did not.
No, you didn't.
Okay. I caught part of it, yeah.
I watched it. I feel like as far as things like that go, he seemed to handle it pretty well. You know, he had the talent to kind of sidestep over any awkward moments and just kind of keep everything going, which I thought was pretty cool.
Yeah, I mean, I think so too. I think in terms of presentation, the EA press conference felt a little bit sterile, but a lot of the stuff that they announced, I thought was pretty cool. Like, especially, I love that Battlefield's going back to World War II. There's been a lot of sort of hullabaloo about the playable female protagonists.
Not only
in Battlefield, but in a lot of these titles that we're going to kind of talk about. And as a, you know, a history guy, it's ridiculous to me because there were a ton of female combatants in the Second World War. So, you know, people that don't know that or think that that's bullshit need to do a little bit more research and learn the truth about history. So I'm excited for Battlefield 5. I don't know, like, we talk about this all the time, but it's hard to fit a lot of FPS games into into your life. It's like almost like you have to master one skill set for a particular game and kind of stick to that to get better and better and better. So there's a lot of first person shooters on this list tonight that I don't know I'm going to get to play anymore.
Mean, so many of these games are becoming like service based games and games that evolve over time. And you really, you know, to really get the full enjoyment of everything that is offered in those games, it requires quite a commitment. And now I'm sure you can just jump into Battlefield 5, play whatever, you know, single player offerings are available, and then, you know, dabble in some multiplayer. But then there's going to be people that go far beyond that in terms of progression and things
like
that.
So right.
Looks like a crazy deep experience. It looks like they announced a battle royale mode as well for the game.
Absolutely. You know what's actually kind of funny is I was expecting more battle royale modes than we got. That was
Everybody was right. Like,
that was the joke going into E3 that's all we were going to get, and we really didn't get a lot of it because I think that was just sort of meme culture, you know, rearing its ugly head.
Sure. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Sure. What I didn't get to see, maybe you guys can tell me about, is the Star Wars Jedi Fallen Order that was revealed by Respawn. Did either of you catch that?
It wasn't really.
I mean,
much
it was
a
just
reveal,
a.
Yeah.
There wasn't a reveal. Yeah, she just sat down next to the head of Respawn. I just blanked on his name, but
is it Vince?
Yeah. Yes, I think so. And he just was like, he basically said the name of the game, and then talked about how it's going to take place between 3 and 4 during the Jedi Purge.
Oh, cool.
And that's it. There were no other details. And the name of the game is Star Wars Jedi Fallen Order. And yeah.
Okay.
I think if the campaign for Titanfall 2 is any indication of what we can get from an action adventure title from Respawn, I think we're in a good place. I'm a little tired of that particular period in history. Between 3 and 4 period. That's just you know, my own opinion. I kind of feel like we know where it's going to go.
Yeah, I mean, it's pretty clear at this point.
Yeah, and it can't have that much of an impact on the narrative of the universe if we kind of already know where it's going next. So, I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. Rogue One to me was kind of the highlight there, right? Like, I don't, I'm like, okay, whatever. But we'll see. I don't know. I'm also just a little, this is kind of goes to one of Scott's major pet peeves, which is he was like, well, this game's not even coming until holidays of 2019, which is like, if they're saying that now, it's probably not honestly coming until spring of 2020. Mm. Most games get delayed. Like when you're a year and a half out, they rarely hit the timeline that you're still aiming for, you know?
So, yeah. There's just a lot that can happen in a year. You know, a lot of games that don't get announced at E3, things that either fall through the cracks or like mid-cycle releases, or just, you know, diamonds in the rough that kind of come out organically, like indie titles that get super huge and then everybody's stoked about it. So
And that's I'm not shitting on them. I'm just saying that's the nature of software development. Like timelines expand over time. They usually take longer than you think. And this game seems to be like, it's going to be like a massive Star Wars game. So it's probably going to take a little longer than expected. So we'll see.
Let's see. Unravel 2 revealed, which is super exciting. It's available to play now. I really enjoyed the first one. I'm sure I'll be playing this one. Something that I did go back and watch after the fact was Sea of Solitude. I thought that was super compelling. And the developer, I saw the whole way it was delivered to, developer sort of came out and talked about, you know, what it means to be alone and just dealing with the feelings of that. And, you know, this whole mechanic of what you turn into when you kind of fall into this, you know, this place where, you know, despair and sadness and things
that. I think it's interesting that a lot of games are on this list that we're going to talk about today are kind of tackling very heavy adult themes. And it's really showing that games, they're for everybody, but they're also, you know, they're also for grownups. And we were talking about Setsuna's Sacrifice, the game that Matt was playing a couple weeks back.
Hellblade,
yeah. And the fact that that was all about mental illness as well. And that seems to be what this is about. So it's interesting that we're finally getting to a place where we're getting these very mature themes.
Absolutely. Let's see. Anthem. We could probably spend a lifetime talking about Anthem.
Yeah.
I went and watched some of the gameplay. It's weird. It's one of those things where they released some gameplay, but it did not seem as if anyone else was allowed to release, you know, their own, you know, so like if you were someone who was invited to play the game hands-on, it didn't look like any of those outlets released gameplay, but instead they were kind of talking over the footage that was released officially.
Right.
Which is fine, but just you know, when things boil down to it, what I really want to see is I want to see the game. I want to see somebody playing it.
I do feel, and they keep saying that it's not going to be Destiny-esque, but I really do feel like it's going to be Destiny/Division-esque. I don't think there's anything wrong with that. They say that a lot of the missions are designed for four players. There's going to be matchmaking. Once you get into your town, however, you are on your own, so you can do more story-based you know, conversation and decision making while you're in town by yourself, and you have to worry about other players, which I really like. That was one thing I really did not like about Destiny and Division, the fact that you, you know, you could be in a city hub and see just tons of other players with ridiculous names breakdancing. It just kind of took me out of the immersion of the experience. I do like the idea of building up a friends list and going on missions with them. I hear that you can do the entire game solo if you want. It's just going to be hard, which I'm fine with. And it looks cool. I think it's, you know, if they get the flight mechanics down right and they get that feeling of speed and motion, I think it's going to be pretty good.
Yeah. From what I've seen, that appears to be interesting to people. Generally for myself, I'm sort of all on board with the idea of advanced mobility in games. So, you know, being able to do things like flying and dashing and sliding and, you know, in the case of Titanfall 2, wall running and things like that. I think that it's sort of time to kind of embrace that and really see where we can go in sort of the shooter space with more advanced mobility.
I agree. I think it's going to be super cool if it all works.
Yeah. Yep. I mean, I like all the things they're saying to me, you know, so I'm just really hoping that the solo campaign is there. I hope I can jump in and out with you guys when we're all like around and available. Like, that's what I want. You know, honestly, I just know it's super hard to pull off. So we'll do a wait and see on that and just see how it goes. I think we're all coming away going like, it looks great. It looks very fun. I just hope we can all play it the way we want to play it and go from there, you know?
For us, the trick of this game, right, and the trick of all these games is if Matt can play 2 hours, but, you know, I have played 10 hours and Ash has played 6 hours, will we all still be able to play together in some kind of cohesive way? That was sort of a problem in the Division for us.
Yeah.
And, you know, really just it depends on how things scale when, you know, friends that don't have the same amount of time to play are in different places, right?
But like with the Division, you know, which I don't know if we're going to talk about later. I can't tell if anybody here wants to talk about it. But with the Division,
we'll see.
With the Division, one of the interesting things was even when you guys were way ahead of me, I could still jump in with you and you could kind of like pull my weight, like pull me up pretty quickly.
Yes.
Which is really all that needs to happen at the end of the day, you know, is like just don't like punish me for not being able to play as often as you guys get to play, kind of thing. Mm-hmm. So, yeah.
Agreed.
Shall we move on to Microsoft?
Let's do it.
Okay.
I have to say this, and I was really impressed with Microsoft's press conference this year. There were a few moments where I was like audibly sort of cheering at some of the things going on. It was pretty no nonsense, cut to the chase, showed off a lot of trailers. There wasn't any bullshit. And I really appreciated that. And I felt like they showed off a lot of really great things and they had a lot of great energy. So, I feel like, you know, definitely in the top two press conferences for me personally.
Oh, I think, I mean, to me, it was probably feasibly the best. Bethesda had a really good one as well, but Microsoft, like you said, just, it was just like trailer after trailer after trailer. And they were like, not really doing too much like presentation other than like, look, this is awesome. And then every once in a while they'd have somebody walk out and kind of say something about it. And then they'd be like, anyways, here's a trailer. which I think was good. That's all I think we care about as not being at E3, you know, like we're not going to go demo the game. So we just want to see what you've got to show us. And then let's like move through this thing. But yeah, I thought Microsoft did a great job.
Absolutely.
We really got like, I feel like Microsoft gave us the fire hose, you know, if you will. Ubi's talked about a lot of games, but it sort of felt long. But Microsoft talked about a lot of games in a way where it just felt like things kept coming at you, you know, one after the other.
Yeah, I literally could not catch my breath during that press conference because it was every 90 seconds there was something else.
I mean, I only really remember two games getting announced, but I'm sure that it seemed like there was a lot of stuff getting thrown at us. But I felt like it was only Forza Horizon 4 and Cyberpunk 2077, so maybe there were other games announced. I don't know.
For sure.
I was so excited for you when I saw that Forza was a thing. I was like, oh man.
I think the moment the car came out, I was like, Forza. It's like, yeah, Horizon.
That's so good. Well, let's jump to the beginning of it because they
they
revealed a new Halo called Halo Infinite.
Sure.
And I kind of got into a Twitter conversation with a few folks right when this was announced, just about how I feel like I at this point, as an old person, I need more from this story. Like, I'm tired of weird ass nebulous, you know, things that I can't follow. I want to see who Master Chief is. Like, I want to see his face. It's been 20 fucking years. I want to, you know, I want to just kind of get to know the character a little bit more. Sure, the mechanics are always brilliant in these games. That's great. But, you know, if you're creating a space opera, give me a cast of characters that you're not going to kill off, that that I give a shit about, that I remember. So that's kind of where I am with this.
Sure. Okay.
Sure. I thought it looked really gorgeous. Like, we'll see what happens. But, I don't know. It's one of those titles. It's like, this is clearly very early. They basically had like a title and a cinematic that they threw together and were like, Halo? And everybody was like, yay, Halo! And then just kind of moved on from there. It was like a good way to kick it off, just to be like, hey, we're pretty serious about showing you stuff. But
the best was, wait, if they're opening with Halo, what are they closing with? And everyone was like, what's happening?
Yeah. I mean, that was kind of like the killer to me, was like, oh shit, they just opened by like teasing a game that is usually their you know, like, encore. Like, this is usually the thing they throw down with, so.
Good stuff. They announced a number of Gears of War titles, the biggest of which was Gears of War Pop. I'm just kidding. the biggest of which was Gears of War 5, which I am, of course, very excited as the resident Gears of War nerd on the podcast.
Yeah, but I really need like some more story. Like, if you're going to give me an alien space opera, you know, with like a tinge of horror, I want to like know what's really going on and where these aliens are coming from and like why they're even bothering with us right now, you know?
We're still having the ground aliens versus space aliens debate.
Yeah. It's a very, very far callback to early episodes.
For those of you that were listening to episode 23 of the Rated Enter podcast, we argued about Halo versus Gears of War. No, but this time around, it's a little bit further down in the timeline. The biggest change is that you play as Kate, who's the first, I guess, main female protagonist in the Gears of War series that you can play as, which is awesome. She was sort of a side character in the last one, Gears of War 4, so we get to play as her now. She's voiced by Laura Bailey, who's great in everything. So I'm, of course, very excited. We got to see a pretty awesome cinematic during the press conference, which made the game look super exciting. Everything's looking very sharp, and I can't wait to see the game in action, chopping people
they're doing,
up.
They're doing that performance capture too, right? I think for Laura Bailey, for the character.
I believe so, except for hopefully they're done because she's like super, super pregnant right now.
Oh, I see.
Yeah. So we'll see what happens with that. But yeah, that's really exciting. The other two, jokingly, Gears of War Pop, don't really know what that's going to be. Probably a
mobile game, right?
Yeah, I believe it's mobile. And then a PC-only Gears of War strategy game in the vein of XCOM, which I'm very excited about.
I'm excited, but it also, like, you know, Halo Wars wasn't the most engaging game of all time. Like, part of me doesn't know that like slapping an IP on it makes a tactic game great necessarily. So
right, I mean, the thing that makes XCOM great is that's what those guys do, right? So like, they make great
games. Is it the same makers? Did I miss that?
No, it's not. I believe it's another studio entirely, not Coalition, it's a whole new crew doing it. But anyway, I'm excited to see what that is. I will definitely play that. What else on this list are you guys excited about?
Honestly, I'm excited for the awesome adventures of Captain Spirit.
Yeah,
I really am.
Which appears to be from what I can tell, is a demo that will lead into, I don't know, something else.
Well, it's supposedly part of the Life is Strange universe. So it's, you know, it's a new Don't Nod game. It involves, I guess, it's a child's imagination and a child's relationship with his father, which is you know, super deep and, you know, hopefully not super heavy, but it's free. It's available at the end of the month, this month.
You can preload it right now,
which is crazy.
Yeah
But these guys make great stuff, and I'm very just really intrigued about how this ties in with the Life is Strange universe. Because
I would be totally cool if it was just like in the same city or something. You know what I mean? Like, I don't even know that it needs to tie in super tightly to the story for me to like where they're going with this, seemingly. Like the look and feel and telling a story about it. It felt very Toy Story-ish, you know, like telling a story about a kid who's making up his own imaginary world. And maybe there's obviously going to be some kind of like powers or something, but I don't know. I was super intrigued by it regardless. They could have said like it's not at all tied to Life is Strange, and I still would have thought this is a cool looking game. So
yes, absolutely. Absolutely. So what else?
Not
what
to
else
you guys... shut you down.
No, I agree. I think it's, I hope it stands on its own, but if there's some like kind of subtle nod to the series, I think that's going to make me very excited. Cause I'm a huge, huge fan of this weird little world that they created just because it's so, so very Twin Peaks.
Yeah. Let's jump into Cyberpunk, right?
Go ahead. Go for it.
So Cyberpunk 2077 from the makers of The Witcher and The Witcher 2 and The Witcher 3, surprisingly. CD Projekt Red, this is their... We found out more details about it after the kind of trailer reveal, but this was really the first trailer at length, and they said it was from Game Engine, which is interesting, at least, of this game, Cyberpunk 2077, which is loosely based off of a tabletop RPG called Cyberpunk 2020. The details they let out later were that it's going to be a first-person RPG with just systems upon systems upon systems, from what I could tell. They kept kind of insisting over and over again this is not a first-person shooter, that it's an RPG first and foremost with shooter mechanics that are, from what I heard later, akin to things like Borderland. So, cool. I'm way down. I mean, if any studio is going to pull off a giant RPG... you know, with 90,000 buried systems, I feel like CD Projekt Red is probably one of them.
Yeah, everything I read about this game got me more and more excited. When I first saw the trailer, I thought it was gorgeous. Then I was like, oh man, I want to make my own character. And then I guess like 10 minutes later, they revealed that there's like hacked information like hidden in the trailer that says, oh yeah, you can make your own character. Basically, they embedded a FAQ into the trailer for the game, which was great. So you can make your own character. You can play as male or female.
Yep. Character's name is V.
And from what I understand, there's going to be vehicles as well that let you kind of travel around the city. The city is all similar to Witcher 3 in that you can move around it with no load times, which is just engineering genius to be able to pull that off at all. Yeah. systems upon systems. You can kind of customize your character to build them the way you want to. There aren't any set classes, so it's kind of a very open tree that you can kind of tweak out your character any way that you want. So if you want, you know, someone who uses smart guns that can hack stuff, you can kind of build that character or really tweak it in any way that you want. And I was gonna say
there's also systems for street cred and quote unquote cool which is like street cred, they said you gain as you like move around the game, and different items you buy will give you different levels. Like if you have a cool jacket, apparently it'll give you a little bit more street cred, or if you pull off different missions, it'll give you different street cred, and the street cred will actually open up even more and more of the game to you as you're playing. So as you unlock street cred, you might get more side missions or more people you can talk to or more, you know, areas you can enter that are like private otherwise, like houses and buildings and stuff, which is pretty cool. The cool rating is kind of hilarious to me, but I still dig it. I think that's neat. And then this game is set... Cyberpunk is very much a Blade Runner-esque setting as far as tabletop RPG goes, and I think they're holding to that pretty tightly. So we're not going to see... It's not, you know, as comparable to a game like Shadowrun, which has a whole lot of like fantasy aspects and magic and you know, orcs and wizards and stuff. This is going to be much more tightly sci-fi and cyberpunk, you know, shockingly, even though it's in the name.
Yeah, good stuff.
I'm excited. Nice. I'm totally ready.
I'm very excited.
Did they announce a date for that game or no?
Not yet.
No, I thought they did. I thought it was next year.
Oh, I don't think there was any date set in stone yet. They just kind of said it'll be ready when it's ready. So I don't think
that's a good way to do things.
Yeah, any quarter or anything like that. So it's just sort of up in the air at this point.
Yeah. It was nice to see Dying Light 2. I guess I wasn't aware of it. I don't know if it was an official announce, but the Dying Light 1 was a fantastic game. I think it has like a cult following at this point. The studio that made the game continues to build upon that world and has added things, even if it's just little, you know, cosmetic things, little goodies. But that's got a super loyal community, and it was a fun game to play. It was basically, you know, Mirror's Edge in the zombie apocalypse, right? So
yeah this, that was the footage they showed of this was really fantastic. They showed off this living, breathing world where all of your actions during the day kind of impact society. So the footage they showed off had your character resupplying the water mains in a part of town, which kind of changed the social dynamic with the police force. And they said, you know, as you do this, there's like hundreds of different choices that will actually impact how the world operates. And then of course it cut to nighttime where there's all sorts of creepy crawlies that you're running away from. But yeah, really cool. Like, parkour system looks gorgeous. It looks great. But again, so many fucking games. Like, what?
Yeah, lots of games. And the first one was massive as well. So it's, you know, again, another big time sink. Anything else from Microsoft that you guys want to talk
Forza!
About? Forza!
Forza!
What do you
want
to tell me about Forza?
Let's talk about Forza.
Yeah.
I mean, it's in England this time. There's going to be seasons.
What?
And day and night like they had before. And then the thing I just read this morning is that there's something like 450 drivable cars in the game this time.
Yeah.
Which is bonkers. Like, that is beyond bonkers. There's going to be crossplay, which I think they had before, right? PC to Xbox, or is this new?
I believe that it did. I believe that it did.
Yeah. So there'll be crossplay again. Tons of new settings, tons of new maps. The game looks like it's bigger and kind of crazier, and I was so in love with Forza Horizon 3 that I'm very excited about 4 coming out, and look forward to driving around jolly old England.
It looks like there's sort of more of a focus on online interactions as well. You saw there was like in the video, there's kind of like that little text messaging system
which is cool. I mean, I don't know that I'll do, you know, I didn't do a lot of it in 3. I don't know if you did or not.
No, not too much.
Yeah. So, but I'm stoked. It's such a beautiful, relaxing, fun, just fun game. And if you guys haven't noticed me in the past 3 months, all I want to play apparently are games that are just fun. aren't heavy and like weighing me down in any ways that I can't handle right now. So
there's nothing wrong with that.
Yeah.
Nothing wrong with that. Yeah, that was it for Microsoft. New Battletoads, no footage shown. Yeah. And the big news is, of course, that Microsoft is acquiring a number of smaller indie studios. Playground Games, of course, maker of Forza. Ninja Theory, who makes some of the best action titles on the planet. Undead Labs and Compulsion Games. I believe there might have been one more. I want to say there was 5. I only wrote down 4 because I am inconsistent.
I believe the 5th one was a new studio that was being formed. If I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, they did say that they are opening a brand new big studio in Santa Monica. So
I believe that studio is called The Initiative.
Which was based on Buffy season 4. Buffy season 4.
It was, Ash.
Shout out to Buffy fans out there. They'll know what I'm talking about.
And of course, I believe that those other studios... Undead Labs, of course, is State of Decay, and Compulsion Games is currently making We Happy Few. So should be a broad variety of crazy things coming from those studios in the next few years.
It's pretty wild. It's going to be awesome.
Yeah.
You guys want to go to Ubisoft?
So there's this game. We'll start with Division 2 because I know Scott.
Oh, thank you. Oh, my God.
Oh, that's all he cares about.
Scott, let's tell our audience this. Scott is very excited about this game.
I don't know why. I mean, like, it's not like there are certainly other games that I can play that are like it right now. I can even go play the current Division. But there's just, and I was telling you guys this online, but there's just something about the mix of the cover-based gameplay with the environment, with the way that the HUD looks and sort of like this, you know, futuristic kind of feel with, you know, a nice mix of looting and upgrading weapons and some light RPG elements to craft a character.
Right.
All that stuff kind of speaks to me, and I'm super stoked about it. And honestly, the one thing that kind of wore on me after the first Division game was just how bleak and dark it was in this, you know, snow-covered environment all the time. And, you know, we find out in Division 2, the game's going to take place in D.C. about, was it 7 to 9 months after the first game? It's the middle of the summer. It's hot. You know, nature's starting to sort of take over the landscape. So we see sort of a very saturated world in the Division II. We saw gameplay that was taking place outside. I believe the demo side quest they showed was that they were exploring the wreckage of Air Force One, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah.
And then, of course, there's a bunch of, you know, under the hood, nuts and bolts kind of things for the super hardcore people that are interested in, you know, min-maxing their characters and stuff like that. But, you know, of course, the gameplay they showed should have looked very familiar to fans of the current Division. And it looked like they managed to sort of reincorporate the drone, maybe as a character ability. I saw a little drone flying around one of the mini bosses there.
Man, that always bugged me that was taken out, because I think in the original Division footage that they showed at E3 many, many years ago, that was one of the coolest things, because it was when, you know, people were really interested in linking up tablets with console play.
Oh, yeah, second screen gameplay. That was like all the rage back then.
For a year, and then it just vanished. But I'm excited for this. You know, I agree with everything you said about the Division. I think the first experience was fantastic, but it suffered from, end game fatigue, I like to call it, where once you completed the storyline, there wasn't really a whole lot to do beyond grinding. And the grind, at least initially, was to be able to complete the raids, but the raids were not really fully realized from what we found out. Like, we did the first one, and it was just like, you know, enemies with a bajillion hit points, and that wasn't really a fun experience, you know?
And then they got swallowed by new games coming out at that point too. It's like, if you get through the game, you enjoy it, and then you go to do like the end game stuff, and you're just like, huh. And there's like a million other games coming out at the same time. You're just kind of like, well, I'm going to go play this other game now.
These games like The Division and Destiny are kind of weird in the sense where, you know, for some, playing from level 1 to 30, completing the story campaign is the game. But then in the eyes of, you know, some of the more dedicated players, playing level 1 to 30 and completing the story mission is the prologue to whatever comes afterwards, right? Right. You know, which Ash referred to as the end game, but for some people is sort of like the game, right?
Right.
So with the season pass, you know, we saw Division release Underground, which I think was a sort of a procedurally generated dungeon crawler. There was a survival mode that I didn't try that had something to do with, you know, trying to fight against, it might have been like a horde mode where you were, you know, freezing to death and needed to stay warm and craft things or something like that. And then they introduced the final mode, which was Last Stand, which I think was primarily like this multiplayer mode. At this point, the servers are not super populated, so it's not really something that you can just jump on and do. But of course, they announced the game in Game Pass, so I guess that would now depend on if people were picking up, you know, the Season Pass content or not. But, you know, for people looking to jump into old Division, Division 1 should see an influx of new players from Game Pass. But I just hope that, you know, like you said, that first raid was basically just one boss with a bunch of adds that had a zillion hit points and we would die instantly. And that's where you find out that the game isn't really for the casual player, right?
Right.
Which is too bad. So hopefully there's more of a variety of things to do. I hope that they learned a lot from sort of the brutality of PvP and, you know, how unenjoyable that can be at times when you get with people that are really just trying to troll you. You know, we look at games like Sea of Thieves now where, you know, you deal with similar issues where you put a bunch of people in a shared space and you really just want them to try their best to either work together, or if you do decide to be combative, that, you know, you do it in a way that's still in the spirit of the game and you're not just trying to ruin somebody's fun, if you will. So I really hope, you know, for Division 2, I really do hope that there's this nice mix of PvP and things that, you know, PvE fans or like maybe slightly more casual fans can do after you complete the story and get to the level cap.
I'm on board. I'm definitely going to give it a shot. I think it looks great. I love the setting. Let's do it.
Let's do it. Yeah. You want to talk about
our show? So
hey, yeah, right. There's a couple other titles in here. I'll let you guys kind of gauge your interest for each one.
Beyond Good and Evil 2 looked awesome.
That's what I thought.
I know. Yeah, I saw the first game. I think I watched you play the first game. And thought it was fun and interesting, but it was a way different kind of gameplay, right? And this one looked kind of crazy. This one looked like they were going full-blown RPG style
yes
game. So
I believe the undercurrent, from what I remember, the undercurrent of the first game did have something to do with sort of this, you know, nature against like this corrupt administration kind of destroying the environment or something like that. So there was kind of like this, you know, David versus Goliath kind of feel to it. Gameplay wise, you know, I think Jade had a staff and fought enemies in sort of like an action combat style. There was a camera mechanic where you had to kind of go around and take pictures of all the animals in the environment. And the game, from what I remember, was slightly open world, but really intended to be more of a linear experience where you just kind of move from thing to thing in the set pieces. There was a watercraft you could move around the environment to get from place to place, but really it was just kind of, you know, the whole experience was sort of laid out in front of you like that.
Yeah.
This game seems to sort of ratchet things up for a modern gaming era, if you will, you know,
right.
Looks to be a wide open world. They showed, you know, a ship flying around in a, you know, terrestrial environment and all kinds of crazy things. So I don't know. I feel like we got to see a lot, but we didn't get to see a lot, right?
Yeah. I mean, it definitely does look like a legit space opera. Like I was really intrigued by what I saw. I was telling you guys, I kind of missed the boat with the first game and never really got a chance to play it, but I know there's a pretty rabid fan following. I do want to say that I thought that the addition of Joseph Gordon-Levitt's Hit Record to have the community create content that's going to appear in the game was brilliant. I don't know if you guys saw that.
Yeah, I did.
It very, very cool. Like the idea that fans can create graffiti art or ambient music or you know, sculpture, really anything, and submit it to potentially be included in the living, breathing game universe. I think it's a really great idea, really ambitious, a lot of work for everybody, like legal teams and, you know, just the, like the logistics of setting up something like that is wild. So
yeah,
if they can pull that off, then hats off to them. But I think that's a really great idea.
Yeah. I thought it all. Agreed. All that stuff. Cool. Agreed.
Cool.
All that stuff.
There's probably there's a big one, but I think we've talked about it some, which is the new Assassin's Creed. We can still talk about some of the new stuff they announced. You can be male or female in this one, right? It's
there's going to be male and female protagonist you can choose from. Yep. There's going to be dialogue options, romance, apparently, yeah. Which is all this stuff is new to the entire Assassin's Creed universe.
They've
never really done anything like this before. You know, it does appear to have, you know, slightly tweaked RPG mechanic from the previous game. So our role-playing mechanics weren't really a big part of the Assassin's Creed universe, but it seems to have sort of crept its way in over time. In the first game, there was this, I don't know if you would call it a skill tree, because it was basically skills that you kind of enhanced and developed over time. In Odyssey, it seems as if you'll be able to unlock certain skills and then assign those skills to to your D-pad. So it looks like you can only have so many of them active at once. So that's something that looks slightly different as well.
I saw they brought horses back.
The horses. I think horses have been in almost every game except for like Syndicate, maybe. I don't know.
This is sort of a side joke, but like, edit your demos, Ubisoft. Like, please. I was like watching Assassin's Creed. I was like, how long have we been watching this for?
It did say the demo was edited for time. Around. Yeah, edited for time, but still a lot of horse. Horse traversal, which is
very long. But yeah, go ahead.
But yeah, those seem to be the big things. Me being the resident Assassin's Creed nerd on this podcast, I was concerned about what is happening with like the meta, right? If Odyssey takes place before Origins, and Origins was supposed to introduce sort of this formation of the Order, right? What is this game actually doing, and is it an Assassin's Creed game at this point? Like, I don't understand.
Who is getting in the machine and traveling back in time, and what's his story?
Yeah, well, that one, I believe I can give you the answer to that one. I think it's going to be the protagonist, the modern day time protagonist from the previous game. Sort of the big reveal in that game is that I believe her name was Layla. She invented a version of the Animus that would allow her to basically enter the DNA of any DNA sample that she was able to acquire. So like she kind of, you know, she was set up as, you know, sort of this tinkerer, this engineer who was also an explorer and found a way to go into ancestors' memories who were not her own. So I believe I will
at
believe
this point,
I,
they can just tell any story in history they want, and it
yeah,
doesn't have anything to do
yeah,
with Assassin's Creed. At
yeah.
All.
So while like literally nobody on the internet cares about this, I just really hope that it ties into this kind of overall story in some way.
Everyone on the internet's like, but can I stab a person with my sword?
Yeah. Well, I mean, everyone on the internet's like, look at her arms, I'll be able to romance people, like this is amazing. Yeah. All that stuff is great. I'm totally on board with that. Just as a sort of a lifelong Assassin's Creed fan, I just want to know that, you know, for people like me that are into the lore, into the story, that there will be something there. It's possible that the main character is carrying some kind of special weapon with them.
Yeah.
And I wonder if it might have something to do with it being a piece of Eden or something related to the precursor race in that game.
I mean, possibly. It is pretty cool. They did reveal that it, you know, does take place during the Peloponnesian War. So Athens is going to be fighting Sparta. That's going to be sort of the main conflict, which is such a cool period in history. Then you have like the Persian Empire kind of creeping around as well. And it's just a really great time. But you're right. I mean, there is no Assassin's Creed. There is no, you know, guild of assassins. They said that you're going to be playing as a mercenary who's kind of has, you know, the option of picking a side during that conflict. So no cool hooded outfits and wrist blades or anything like that. So
yeah,
very different.
Yeah, it'll be interesting. So I'm sure there will be more to come. That game, I think, is going to be one of the first major releases to hit this holiday, October 2nd, if you get like one of the special editions. So we'll know soon enough what's going on with that game.
Cool.
Something else I wanted to talk about was Transference.
Yeah,
I mean, very
I was
briefly.
Bring up that one as well.
Yeah, what was that? Elijah Wood came out on
Elijah
stage.
Elijah Wood. Yeah, Ubisoft just rolling out the stars in this one.
Yeah, for sure. And they also don't turn off their mics right on stage, which is great.
Good job.
Yeah,
it was sort
job.
Of endearing though. It was like kind of endearing. They like walking off. They're like, "You did great. Don't worry about it." And I was like, "Wow."
At one point, I heard someone that was like, "Yeah, they keep moving my time around. I got totally messed up." I was like, "Yeah, okay." Yeah, so that better can continue as a theme in future press conferences from Ubisoft. But yeah, Transference appears to be this crazy, I don't know, psychological thriller thing. I feel like we saw very little of it, but it was enough.
I almost tuned out entirely because they kicked it off by being like VR experience, and I was like, oh well, you know. And then they let loose after that it's going to be traditional console as well. That it's not just VR. They're going to do everything across the board, but. Yeah, some kind of crazy psychological game about, it looks like about family loss or something. It seems insane.
Yeah, it could be a little bonkers. To me, from what I've seen of this, it kind of mentally fits into the same space as Layers of Fear and their follow-up game, which is Observer, where it's just this really super dark psychological mindfuck of a game where you're just kind of like, you don't even know why you're playing it because you're just feeling so horrible about it. But it's just sort of like the immersion in the experience for, I don't know, just getting into something really heavy and dark. It just seems pretty interesting.
Yeah, I agree.
Yeah.
Good stuff.
Anything else from Ubisoft? Any interest in Starlink?
Starlink. I actually think Starlink looks pretty fun and interesting. It's a space sort of exploration game, but also with some tactics and fighting, it looked like. Along the lines of No Man's Sky or I'm trying to think of a good space battle game, but I'm
Star
coming
Fox?
Up blank. Sure, Star Fox. Yeah.
Yeah. Mean,
essentially a modern day Star Fox. But the big reveal that Ubisoft had was that Star Fox is going to be a playable ship inside of this game in character. You were right. We talked about this on Slack, you and I, Scott, a little bit. The game comes with toys that you have to buy to have ships, and it looks like those toys are required to play the game. So along the lines of what's that giant one that I just blanked the name
Skylanders.
Yeah, along the lines of that, you're going to be going out buying real actual toys. The neat thing that I saw though is that those toys are completely moddable, and the mods that you put on the toy are the ones that you get in game. And it's completely changeable on the fly, sort of, between battles. So you can, like, make this ship with different weapons and different armor and different flight classes and stuff, or switch ships out when you want to. And it's kind of like mixing, you know, Legos with video games or whatever, and being able to build your own ship entirely. And it looked fun. It looked cool. They did say it's coming out on Switch, Xbox, and Sony, I think.
Switch is the only place you can get the Star Fox starter kit, though.
It, Yes, and they did confirm that for Switch, if you have the toy, it will download that toy essentially to your profile so that when you take the Switch, you don't actually need the toys with you anymore. So,
oh, you don't need them. Okay.
Only when you're on the go with the Switch is the was the okay. line I heard. So every other machine, you have to have the toy with you. When you take the Switch on the go, you will have access to the ships that you built without having to have the toy in front of you.
Okay, that's so, cool. That's cool.
Very no big interesting.
Carrying around. Yeah.
Okay. And then I think there's probably one that people are going to ask us like why we didn't talk about. I think that's going to be Skull and Bones. It's just not a game that really, I don't think really spoke to any of us. If I don't want to speak not for you me. Guys, but
I think you're right. I mean, it looks like it's fun, but it's also, I don't know how much time I have to spend on a game like that. You know, if it's, yeah. if it's mainly sort of PvP battles, I don't know if there's enough of me for that.
Yeah. Yeah. And I guess in my opinion, there will be some obvious comparisons to Sea of Thieves, but I think Skull and Bones has more in common with, you know, For Honor or Rainbow Six yeah. Siege, you know, in terms of, you know, underlying gameplay mechanics. And it just happens to take place, you know, on a pirate ship in the water. Right. So
I think I also came to terms with the fact that I am much less interested in a pirate game than I thought I was. Like,
okay, that's fair.
Like, just personally, it has nothing to do with any of the games. They're all very good, but I've picked up and played a few that are like set in pirate settings, and I'm just like, huh. Like, <Yeah. laughs> like it's not eliciting like spaghetti western feeling that I get out of, you know, like Red Dead or, you know, sci-fi games or whatever. Like, I get something like kind of visceral out of that, and for pirates I just always keep going like, huh, okay. Like, I'm not really enjoying this a whole lot. So, to me, I kind of saw it. I was like, oh, cool, another pirate game. But
like, I could see some crazy dedicated community that galvanizes around Skull and Bones, yeah. but I don't think it's going to be any of us. So that's more than likely why we're not talking about it.
I quoted you guys during it, and I said, this game looks infinitely streamable. And you were like, yeah. It's like, it just looks like a cinematic pirate game that I would watch. You know, I'd watch people play it, but there's no way I'm going to throw time into it to be any good.
Yep, that's fair.
Hi, this is Melissa Hutchison, and you're listening to the Rated NA podcast at nerdappropriate.com.
Bethesda.
Let's do Bethesda.
Okay, someone tell me about this because I didn't get a chance to see it.
Oh man, it was really good.
It
was really good because they're putting out a ton of stuff that if you were to play all of it, you would die of old age.
Yeah, sure.
Like the games they are in the process of building are just massive, massive, massive games. But the one that's dropping this fall is Fallout 76, which is
so crazy. It's coming out this fall. It's insane that they held it this close and then launched it like a few months later.
Right, it's unbelievable. So Fallout 76 is set in, I want to say, West Virginia, and it takes place, like we said in the last episode, about you know, shortly after, maybe 20, 30 years after the bombs drop. So it is a prequel to all the other Fallout stories. It's also four times larger than Fallout 4, which I cannot even...
That is crazy.
Yeah, Fallout 4 is gargantuan, and this is four times bigger than that. This also has a multiplayer component, which allows you to go out with friends and experiment and, you know, build stuff.
It's all multiplayer, is it not? You're always online, there's always other people.
Like, yes.
I have a feeling it seems like they're going all in on their crafting system from 4, and, you know, go survive and build and hang out with your friends and have this just giant map that you can hang out on. So,
right. Mm-hmm. I think it's more of rather than it being an MMO, it's more of like an instanced, similar to what they did with the GTA 5, where you log in and there'll be probably other, you know, 10, 15 other people in your game world. Or maybe more, depending. I guess the map is colossal. It'll probably be many more than that, but it's not going to be, you know, thousands and thousands of people on in the same world. It's probably going to be dozens, I'm assuming.
Right.
But it looks great. You know, I'm a big fan of these games. I've played through pretty much all of them. I have a feeling I'll be spending a lot of time with this one. If you're listening,
it feels kind of like what they did from 3 to New Vegas, where it looks very similar. Like it, like game. A lot of people put effort into probably looking better, and I'm sure if any of them heard me say this, they'd be like, "You asshole!" But like, it looks like 4. It looks like they're taking the engine from 4, polishing it up a little, and then just expanding it like crazy. Essentially, like it didn't. It was not a. It looks as beautiful as 4 did. But not, I don't know. I had a little bit of trouble. The only problem I have with Fallout is that the destinations aren't always super clear, because that kind of everything looks kind of the same apparently after nuclear bombs fall all over the place. So
I think there's some validity to that. Yeah, no, yeah. I think you're right. I kind of agree with what you're saying about how it looked. My biggest wish for a numbered Fallout would be, okay, they need a new engine at this point.
Yeah,
because it's just a little long of tooth, but I do think it looks a little bit better. But you're right, it definitely looked like it was the same sort of tech as 4. So,
but I mean, if you take that tech and then expand it 4x, which is bonkers, that's we'll see what happens. But I'm gonna play it, even though I never finished 4, which is shocking because I think it's the first one I haven't finished that they've put out in modern times. But
oh wow,
yeah, I don't know why I got lost in crafting and then never finished.
I got so hopelessly addicted to that game. It was so sad.
Yeah.
I think when, like, Matt, I think you came over and I showed you, like, here's my collection of power armor. I had like 70 different sets of power armor all just like standing around.
That's amazing.
It was great. Go ahead.
I was going to say, I haven't been able to play one of those games since Fallout 3. I 100%ed Fallout 3 in a time where like playing an 80-hour game was sort of not really the norm at the time.
Yeah.
And I remember getting to the end of that and looking at the save file and seeing that it was over 80 hours. And I was like, okay, And I mean, of course, since then I've played games that require that much time, but just knowing that a game like 76 is going to be 4 times larger just kind of gives me anxiety thinking about it.
Yeah.
It's a lot. It's a lot of time, Yeah, it's a big time sink.
Yeah.
Speaking of big time sinks, there is a whole new IP, which they said is their first brand new IP in 25 years.
Yeah.
A game called Starfield. We don't know much about it, but it is apparently being developed for the next generation of hardware, which is what I'm hearing. So not the current PS4 Pro or Xbox One X, the next one.
Yeah.
So it's being developed for that. It's supposed to utilize some sort of weird cloud technology that will allow, I guess, everyone to coexist in like this big shared universe. And it sounds very, very ambitious and kind of crazy from all the leaked information that's kind of floating around about it. But it's, I mean, gosh, these guys on a new space opera IP is like, it's going to be wild. I mean, if you think of what they did for RPGs in general with Elder Scrolls and with Fallout, them moving up into space is going to be game changing.
Yeah, absolutely.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, just the thought of being able to, if in Fallout you can get a set of power armor and set up your house, just imagine what you'd be able to do in terms of putting a starship together and flying it around, if that's a thing that you can actually do in this game. Like, just, I think we tend to be more space oriented people in terms of gaming. And I think that doing that in an RPG space is challenging to do. And so I'm glad they're kind of taking up the challenge and building something in that space.
Yeah.
I concur.
I agree.
Yeah.
They also announced Rage 2. I never really played Rage 1. Did you guys play Rage 1?
I did not.
I did not either. But I've heard many good things.
Yeah. My understanding is that it is a Borderlands-esque game, but obviously not with the humor and the colors. The humor, I guess, is a little different in this game. Yeah.
It's like Borderlands set in Mad Max world, essentially, right?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It looked cool, though. I did like, the reason I brought it up is I really liked the joke, because didn't Walmart in Canada accidentally leak this game? And then they, in the press conference, they were like, we're really excited to announce, along with our partners, Walmart Canada, the release of Rage 2. And I was like, oh, that's good. Like, because they're mad at the moment, but then to be able to make a joke out of it and move on with life, that's pretty cool. Wolfenstein 2 Youngblood. Right.
Yeah. Sort of a spin-off slash sequel to Wolfenstein, with BJ Blazkowicz's twin girls as the lead protagonists, which is crazy and cool, but has co-op. co-op Wolfenstein, guys.
Yeah.
That'll be bonkers, man.
I'm going to hire the kid next door to spray me and my wife with ketchup as we play this game. We'll just sit there. we'll just sit on the couch and just...
Did you write that down so you would have it later?
No, I didn't. No? I actually just thought of it. So we'll sit there and the kid next door will come by with like a big... Just spray us down. Oh, it'll be so fantastic. That's why will you guys come over and we can just spray each other with ketchup?
Yeah, I'll fly to Florida to spray you with ketchup.
How did we get from playing Wolf 2 Youngblood to spraying each other with ketchup? Are we still playing the game? I want to still play the game.
Yeah, I want to play. I don't really. Yeah.
Ketchup not included. All right.
They announced Doom Eternal too. Interesting because I think they said they were going to launch it on Switch at the same time as they launch on the big boys, right?
Yeah. Switch gets lots of love this year.
Crazy. But Doom Eternal looked kind of cool. It was hell on earth this time, they said, and it was going to be moving into the above ground world and shooting demons, which is fun.
Oh, cool. Mm-hmm. There was something else not on our show notes, but they did announce there was a DLC pack for Prey, the game Prey called Moon Crash. That I think is available now. I think that of all the games in my pile of shame, I think Prey is sitting right at the top. System Shock 2 is probably one of my favorite games of all time, like top three, top five. And this game definitely kind of scratches that itch in many, many ways. And I just feel really bad that I haven't played it and I really need to. Now with this DLC coming out, it just kind of reminds me, it's like, hey, you need to go back and play this game. So. You know, fans of obviously Dead Space, BioShock, System Shock would love Prey. You could probably get it for a song at this point, and now the DLC is out, so there's no reason not to play.
No reason. And then a bevy of Elder Scrolls announcements, am I right?
Yeah, not much info yet, but they are making Elder Scrolls 6, which is going to be, of course, probably on that same next generation system at this point. So we probably won't see that for another 2 or 3 years. And Blades was playable there on the show floor. There's some people that I work with that actually went and played it. You know, for mobile devices, them moving into the mobile space, which is really interesting. So it has sort of an adventure hack and slash RPG for tablets and for phones.
Have you played Elder Scrolls on your Alexa yet?
I have not played it yet. some people on my timeline have played it, so I'm curious how it is.
Which is another one they announced. That wasn't Blades, right? They announced a joke version of Elder Scrolls Alexa with a fake commercial and everything. But apparently it is an actual skill you can use on your Alexa right now.
It's like, yeah, it's like an RPG. It's like
Unlimited or something like that?
Yeah, it was something like that, yeah.
It's great because everyone makes fun of Skyrim because it's you know, it's on basically everything. And they keep re-releasing it. So that was the wonderful joke, which I thought was great.
I did think Bethesda won the like sense of humor award for E3. Like they came out with jokes. They opened with Andrew WK of all things, this bizarre performance by Andrew WK in front of a sitting crowd, waiting for him to finish patiently. And then, it was just good. It seemed like a bunch of good announcements and a lot of fun.
A lot of energy. Yeah, I was happy with that one. That one was fun to watch. Anytime I watch these, and I'm like, that was enjoyable. I'm just like I'm happy that I sat there for an hour, you know?
Yeah.
So
indeed. So let's talk about Sony. It's a great transition to Sony's conference.
Totally.
I'll start by saying I didn't enjoy the presentation as much.
I was so confused.
It was confusing. I was so confused. Yeah,
I know who it was. Sorry, interrupting really quickly.
Yeah.
It's one that we don't have on here. It was Square Enix had Keith David.
Oh, Square Enix had Keith David. My bad. Okay. No either problem. Way. Either way.
The Sony press conference, it was weird. They had musical, I guess, interludes between each one of the big games revealed. So they kept moving people to different venues, which was just odd. But I mean, I guess at this point, it doesn't matter. It was just put together for me. It was a little odd. But it opened with Last of Us 2, which I will say is probably the most viscerally violent game I think I've ever seen in my life.
Mm-hmm.
To the point where, like, I think, first of all, I love Last of Us. I don't know if you guys got a chance to ever play through it. It was a brilliant experience. It was great stealth action adventure game with a wonderful, you know, wonderful voice acting and just a really great narrative. But the thing about it was that it was very real. It felt very real and kind of off-putting. And you kind of felt the same way watching the introduction to Last of Us 2. The violence was just, they're getting to the point where the game is so beautiful looking and the animation so fluid. The violence just felt, almost like it almost made me uncomfortable. But not to the point where I'm like, I'm not playing this, but to the point where I was just like, oh man, like there's a point where someone gets shot, but it's like in the cheek and like, you see the bullet, you know, it's just like, it's just like, just absolutely brutal stuff.
I tell you what, I remember playing The Last of Us 1 and finishing the game. And immediately after putting that in controller, I was like, this game was fantastic. And I never want to play it again because I just felt so terrible inside after finishing the game because it was just so, you know, like it's a gut punch after gut punch, right? So I just don't know if I could go through that again. I mean, the game is phenomenal. I would love to play. I think, you know, there was a sort of like a DLC or sequel that followed the first game as well, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And I just don't know, man. Like the game was fantastic, but it just made me feel so terrible. I'm just hesitant.
It's very dark. It's very, very dark. Mm-hmm. And like I said, like there's a lot of games that are dark, but sometimes they're dark and kind of comic booky. This is, you know, it's very rooted in reality. So when people die and you kill another human, you know, with like a knife or a crowbar or something, it feels like a little fucked up, you know.
It's not
cartoon violence by any means. It's like, you know, real adults, you know, hardcore violence. So other than that, I think the game looks, you know, absolutely fantastic. It has some of the best animation that I've ever seen in my life. So it's unreal that we're getting to the level where, you know, people move that way in games. So that looked great. Jumping on over to Spider-Man. Man, I'm excited for this. I think the action looks fantastic. I hope that the narrative is long enough to warrant the price tag. I know it is going to be open world, so there's going to be a lot to do and probably a lot to, you know, explore and gather and, you know, quests to do and things like that. But I you know, with a game like this or any adventure title, really, you have to be like, is it going to be a 5-hour experience? Is it going to be a 10-hour experience? Because once you get through that story, a lot of times there's not a ton to do. So, so we'll see. But I think everything I've seen about Spider-Man makes me want to play it. I can't wait. It's going to be good.
Yep. I don't think there's anything to worry about with that game. I think it'll be fantastic.
Mm-hmm.
Can I talk about Control?
Yeah.
Please do. What do you know about this game?
So my viewing experience for Sony was, it was at a time when I couldn't really watch it. So I was kind of like taking a peek at my phone from time to time to see what was going on. I tuned in the middle of this Control trailer and I'm watching it and I'm thinking, this shit looks like Quantum Break. I can't believe they're copying it. This is ridiculous. And then it's like Control from Remedy. And I go, ah, yes. Okay. Fantastic. come to find out that it's built on the same game engine as Quantum Break, which I'm totally cool with. And I'm almost at the point where if you told me that I had to choose between another Alan Wake story or another game built on the Quantum Break engine, I would take the Quantum Break game because I really enjoyed, I love time manipulation gameplay, games where you kind of have these supernatural powers where you can manipulate, you know, energy around you in the environment as part of combat. I've always been a sucker for that. It looks like in Control, it has sort of more of like a paranormal angle to it in terms of what your character can do. It's funny because I watched like an 8-minute interview about this game and I was almost watching it like side eye because I didn't want to, you know, it's like when a movie's coming out, you don't want to watch any trailers for it. You just want to kind of experience the game. So I was like half listening and trying not to really learn too much about the game as I was watching the trailer. But it looks like that you, your character sort of becomes the head of this, some kind of organization, that the Federal Bureau of Control. You're given some special weapon that only the bureau leader can wield, and this weapon you know, helps you to harness all these amazing powers where you're using the environment almost like force powers to kind of manipulate things around you. But it looks like there's also some kind of alien or supernatural angle to it too, because you see somebody walking through an office building, all the characters, all the, you know, all your staff are like floating in the air, like lifeless, like you know, like something out of Oxenfree or whatever. So I do think that at this point, Remedy does have sort of a art style that you can look at one of their games and go like, oh yes, this is a Remedy game. That is definitely there. And just to see sort of a different twist on Quantum Break gameplay gets me really excited. And it's coming, it's multi-platform. And that's why Sony announced it, but it's coming to PC and Xbox too. So I will be there.
Sweet. Awesome.
Yeah, man. Super, super excited. I can't wait.
I am going to mirror your excitement. Resident Evil 2 remake. This was,
yeah, I wanted to ask you about this. How do you feel about a remake of a game in your beloved franchise?
I'm so excited, man, because the first Resident Evil has been remade so many times. Resident Evil 1 has been remade countless times. Resident Evil 2, a lot of people truly feel that that is Resident Evil 2 and Resident Evil 4 are widely considered to be the best in the series by fans. You know, introduces Leon Kennedy, introduces Claire, and it has this great, you know, blown up Raccoon City as your aesthetic for the game. And it's, you know, on current gen consoles looking gorgeous and coming out relatively soon. So, you know, we're getting obviously all new art, all new graphics, all new voice acting. So it is a complete remake. No, I don't think any assets are going to be reused at all at this point. So it's going to be really, really cool. Interested to see how it performs. It's weird because Resident Evil 2, I want to say, I don't know, maybe 98 it came out, maybe 99, somewhere right around in there.
Yeah,
so it's been, you know, close to 20 years. And we're getting these games kind of coming back for, you know, remaking this crazy series. So I'm very excited. I will definitely pick this up and play through it again. It has probably been 17 years since I've played Resident Evil 2. So
how soon into the trailer did you know what it was?
Oh, 5 seconds.
Oh, okay. Okay. Gotcha. Yeah.
Absolutely. 5 seconds. Yeah.
Okay.
I knew as soon. Yeah. As soon as they showed the police station, I was like, oh, I know exactly where that is.
Nice.
Yeah. I played those games a lot of times.
Is that faster or slower than how soon you knew it was Division 2, Scott?
I think I got that one pretty fast as well. I mean, that was no secret though. I think the Resident Evil 2 was a secret, but Division 2 was not. So it was a huge
announcement. Let's talk about Death Stranding for just a couple seconds, because I know people are really excited about this and I want to ask you guys why.
I mean whatever they're doing in terms of the marketing and the subject matter, it's not like I even actively dislike it. I just have no interest in what is being presented to me, you know, as a technique to get me interested in the title, right? Like there's just nothing there for me to grab onto that even makes me think for even a second that I would be interested in this game. So totally not for me. It's almost like complete indifference in my opinion.
It's weird though, because Matt and I are fans of Metal Gear and fans of Kojima. But there's always an aspect to what he did that was just a little like not good David Lynch, but to me like the bad David Lynch, where it's like,
right,
where it's like, oh, that's just 30 minutes of nonsense that only you understand, maybe a little bit.
Right.
So I don't know. Like I want to care about this game, but like you guys said, I don't really know what it's about or what's going on. And I don't really, I don't feel like I should have to work so hard to figure out what the narrative of the experience is about. And that's, you know, maybe why I'm not the audience for it.
My problem is this, is that there are art house games now, and there are many of them of like a million different kinds that you could play if you wanted to play, right? And so for this to feasibly try to like pitch itself as like a AAA art house game, which is what it seems like it's attempting to do, I'm just sort of with Ash. I'm just kind of like, okay, but I don't understand any of this. Like you keep opening up, it's the second time they've opened a trailer with like the baby or whatever, and like just none of it, it's all like nonsense movements that like put together. I don't know. I'm just gonna get frustrated if I talk about it too heavily. It's there, like it's just very, it's very frustrating in nature to put together something that is like weird for weird's sake and then have, and then expect me to be like I'm in for like no seeming reason at all. Plus I'm sort of in fatigue mode too, which is like, what is this, the third major, fourth major game convention that we've seen some nonsense trailer come out about this game that you're just like,
sure,
okay, can we know anything yet about what is happening in this world or who are we or, you know, like any of it. And the gameplay was like fine, I guess, but it was just him walking for like 15 minutes talking to somebody on the radio
and hauling suitcases. Don't forget the the 20 suitcases he was carrying. I'm like, I don't want to do that shit in real life. Like, I don't want to carry boxes around. I will
happily let this game come out and let all the people who just love Kojima will play anything that he puts out. That's fine. And like, if it's great, cool. The fortunate thing for me is it's on PlayStation 4. I don't have one, so there's like no pressure for me to pick this thing up at all.
That's kind of my point, is that it's, you know, people are going to play this game. That's totally fine. I'm sure some people will love it. You probably won't come to this podcast to hear about it. You know, that's kind of where it stops, right? Anything else from Sony?
I just want to end with one quick thing about this. I don't want to sound like I'm snarky about the title. I genuinely just don't understand it. So if you're a listener and you kind of get what they're going for by presenting the game to people in this way, reach out and let us know, because I am very curious as to like what the marketing's trying to do and what the game, who the game is supposed to appeal to, because I love all sorts of games and I can't see who this is for. So
I am not being snarky for snarky sake either. I am legitimately frustrated by it. And like, I get frustrated like this about movies. David Lynch, I get frustrated about sometimes. I think some of the stuff he's done is amazing. And then there's other things I've watched where I'm just like, the fuck am I watching? Like, why am I doing this to myself right now? Kind of feeling. Mm-hmm. And maybe that's what they're going for ultimately. I have no idea, but it's just such a hard sell for me in the world of games. Like, unless there's something really beautiful and artistic at the end of it, just like confusion for confusion's sake just annoys me to no end. So,
all right.
I'm with Ash. If you have an explanation, please, by all means, let us know, because I'm completely lost on this one.
Cool. I think we should acknowledge that Square Enix did do a press briefing with Keith David, which was fantastic. I don't really think that we are sort of in the Square Enix space in terms of, like, you know, some of the JRPGs go.
Well, we've also talked about a couple of the things they announced. That most of the stuff they announced at their own thing were announced by other companies as well. Like Microsoft talked about Awesome Adventures of Captain Spirit, which is coming out from Square. And the one that I don't think we saw anywhere else was Tomb Raider, Shadow of the Tomb Raider, which looked interesting and looks like a nice new Tomb Raider game. I enjoy them very much. I'll probably pick it up. So,
I think it's going to be, I think it's going to kind of put a bow on the trilogy that was started with the reboot game. So, we're definitely on board with that. I think somewhere, I don't know where they announced it. I think somewhere along the line, speaking of Don't Nod, they announced another game called Twin Mirror, which is crazy, just the rate that they're putting games out. But I don't remember what press event that was announced at, but it's going to be published by Bandai Namco. So just something else to keep an eye on. Looking at other Square Enix titles, I'm casually interested in Just Cause 4, but I haven't played 3 yet, even though it's on my game pile. But I do like open world destructive type games. But then as far as some of the, more like Japanese leaning titles go, it's just really not exactly my thing. I don't know about you guys.
I think there was a new Platinum game announced as well. But
Babylon's
set around
Babylon's
it.
Fall. Yeah.
Yeah. So
Platinum games are sort of a known quantity at this point, in my opinion. Yeah. You kind of know what you're getting from that. So
it was a very down tempo presser. Like you said, I mean, it was the Keith David part was cool, but it was also just it was like Nintendo in the sense that there was no actual presser going on. It was just kind of videos.
That was like a super compact half hour though, which I almost appreciate.
It was very compact, compared to the one we're about to talk about.
Very nice. Oh, are we going to talk about Nintendo is the last one?
Let's talk about Nintendo, yeah.
Let's do it.
Nintendo, I mean, we could just read the list, right? It was like Fire Emblem, Fortnite, and then 30 minutes Smash. Of Smash Brothers, where it was like, I think I told you guys this. It was almost like we got a press conference where they read through the patch notes and just kind of told us like every little thing they were doing.
There was a piece of it that was very Japanese feeling, where it was like they released a trailer and everybody was like, cool. And then like after the trailer, they're like, but wait, we're going to do every character. And then they one by one showed every character in no particular order from what I could gather either. And then they were like, but wait, each character's got more stuff. And then they one by one went through every character and what the moves and like abilities they added to them were, which was weird because there's 65 characters.
Yes.
And then they were like, but wait, there's a new character. And then they like announced
Ridley from Metroid.
And it's like, that's cool. Felt like that could have been announced before you announced all of the characters' new abilities. Yeah. And then they're like, but wait, here's a trailer. And I was just like, how much Smash Brothers are we going to watch?
Yeah, that was weird.
It,
I mean, like,
it made me wonder if they pulled Metroid at the last minute, like if they were going to announce more Metroid stuff and then thought, ah, the game's not ready, pulled it at the last minute, but had this time block and said, okay, well, let's just go all in on Smash and show stuff for Smash all the whole time, because it felt really weird. It was just like, why would any company spend this much time talking about one game?
Yeah. Well, to quote our old pal, Nate, here's the thing, right? The thing is that you don't need to sell Smash Brothers to a Smash Brothers fan, right? Right. If you just said Smash Brothers Ultimate will include every character from every previous Smash game and every map from every previous Smash game, I think people would go like, okay, cool. Yeah, I'm going to buy that. Let's go. And like, that's it, right? And then you could have done all that other stuff some other time, or put it in patch notes or whatever, right? But, you know, obviously there's a section of the community that's going to be super stoked about a half an hour of that, but to a broader audience that is tuning in to watch Nintendo's E3 2018 announcements, which were totally dwarfed by a single title. It could have been a little alienating for some people, right?
Yeah.
Other titles include Super Mario Party, Xenoblade Chronicles 2 DLC, Pokemon Let's Go, Fortnite, and I feel like, didn't Nintendo also drop Overcooked 2 in there?
They did. Yeah, Overcooked 2. They announced a couple indies that are coming to the Switch. I think the biggest takeaway I had, other than the Super Smash Brothers extravaganza, the biggest takeaway I had is, oh man, people have noticed how many units the Switch sold, and third parties are starting to make games and indie developers are starting to move to it, which ultimately I think is a good thing. I'm really enjoying my Switch. We've talked about before, but like, it's interesting to see. It's something we talked about through the whole debacle of the Wii U, which is just like, you can't make a lesser system and then not sell it and expect other people to come make stuff for it. And this one feels way more like Nintendo's like, oh, we're reaching out, we're letting indie developers into our ecosystem, we're trying to get the bigger name games in here, you know, and the bigger name games want to be on it because there's friggin' however many millions of units out there already, which is bonkers.
What's crazy is that when you open up the eStore on the Switch, it is like almost hard to find the AAA games because there are so many indies in the store.
There's a ton of indies. Yeah. The last thing they did mention, which is kind of interesting as a kitschy item, but they announced a Pokeball controller for the new Pokemon Let's Go games. Mm-hmm. And it is a literal controller that apparently comes with Mew if you buy it. It's like, it's got its own Pokemon you're going to get with it, which I thought was fun. I don't know.
They're not going to quit with those toys. It's crazy.
No, absolutely not. The other cool thing they did, the other cool thing they announced with Pokemon Let's Go that I thought was neat was your Pokemon Go creatures that you've captured, Pokemon that you've captured, will transfer over to the game apparently somehow, which is different. It's kind of cool, little blend of their mobile and console worlds.
Yeah. And then I think either in Nintendo or Ubi's, they talked about Donkey Kong DLC coming to Mario and Rabbids.
I think it was Ubi's.
I will just keep telling everybody that game is fantastic. And if you own a Switch or you like turn-based combat, it's something that should be in your game library.
Yeah, I think once I get through Odyssey, that's on the list. Although Tennis is coming out, and that looked fun. So I probably will pick that.
Super
as well.
Surprising titles for sure.
Cool.
Anything from PC Gamer Show? I think you talked about a game called Sable that looked super interesting.
I did. I shared it with you guys. It was something I saw after the fact, but there's a indie RPG for PC coming out called Sable. Mm-hmm. It's got a really cool art style to it. Looks super chill, and the soundtrack is by an artist that I really like called Japanese Breakfast, that I've recommended to you guys before. She actually released an album with a game, like a built-in like web game you could play, and I don't know if this is an expansion on that or not, but Sable looks awesome. I would highly recommend going and looking it up on the trailer. I think it's PC only, and I don't know release date off the top of my head, but it is a cool looking game with an awesome, very relaxed soundtrack, very like 2D looking kind of sketch art game. So
cool.
Check that out.
Cool.
And then, Ash, nice. You had one in here for Star Control Origins?
Yeah, so Stardock is making the, I guess, a spiritual prequel to the Star Control games. Same similar mechanics. I actually watched some gameplay of it. If you are a fan of the Star Control games from the 90s, you'll probably like this a lot. It's sort of, we've talked about it before on the show, but it's in a lot of ways the precursor to the Mass Effect series, with dialogue choices and, you know, a lot of interacting with aliens and kind of saving the universe, you know, one planet at a time sort of situation. But the action is more sort of arcadey, top down ship combat. Mm-hmm. So this is looking really good. It's coming out this fall. It's going to be available on PC. I don't know if there's any console plans at this time, but it's looking really good. So I'm pretty happy with it. And the other big piece of news is that Sega is bringing a number of their big AAA titles that are, I guess a lot of these have already been released in Japan, but they're going to be released here in the States on PC. The one, of course, that I'm most excited about is Valkyria Chronicles 4, which is, again, dropping this fall. Nice. It's getting gangbusters great reviews in Japan right now. So I'm happy that the Valkyria series is back. If you like turn-based strategy at all, it's like one of the best ever made. So definitely check out the original Valkyria Chronicles and 4, which is coming out this fall.
Cool. So I think we've made it to the end.
But we didn't list all the sports titles EA is putting out. So real quick, they're putting out.
Was there any mention of Madden? I didn't even watch EA's.
There was. They had two dudes walk out.
Yeah.
Yeah. There was definitely.
Yeah.
Madden made his $10.
There you go. So what we'll probably do is we'll probably talk a little bit more about this stuff and answer or actually list some of your answers to the things that you're excited about at E3 on the next episode. Hold on.
Let me give you guys an aquato then, since we'll wrap up this show in an intelligent way. How about that?
Okay.
Let's do it.
Go for it.
Okay. So I'm going to ask you guys for real talk. Three titles that you will definitely play from this list, let's say before the next E3. So we talked a lot about things that are, you know, either going to be coming out or look interesting or you're excited about. But like, you know, when you put pen to paper and you pull out your wallet, what are you really going to be playing before the next year. E3? Give me three titles from the big list.
Oh, man.
Yeah.
Cyberpunk 2077.
You will not, because it will not be out before next E3.
Oh,
yeah.
Oh, so I. Oh my.
That's why I was. That's why I was saying before the next E3.
that's always the problem, right? Is that like E3 is great for building hype, but I'm always interested in things that I can do now and things that I can do before the next E3.
I can do this. You ready? I can do this, guys. You
yeah,
ready?
Let's do it.
Okay. So, Awesome Adventures of Captain Spirit.
Mm-hmm.
Forza Horizon 4, I assume, will be out in the next year. Did they give a date?
I don't know. That's a good question. I would assume.
I'll give an alternate in case it doesn't come out before next year. Division 2.
Mm-hmm.
And then my alternate will be... I'll play Super Smash Brothers. Even with their 45-minute introduction to the stupid game, I'll probably
Surprising. That's surprising. Wikipedia says that Forza Horizon 4 is coming out October 2nd. So same day as Assassin's Creed Odyssey.
Oh, really? That soon? Oh,
that's going to be the start of the apocalypse, I guess.
Well, then it's been nice knowing you guys.
Yeah, okay, cool. Yeah, Ash.
I will definitely play Fallout 76.
Mm-hmm.
I will definitely play Resident Evil 2.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And I will definitely play Gears 5 if that's before next summer.
It's not going to come out before next summer. No way.
No?
Not unless, okay. Did they put a date on it? Like, I feel like those size games, if they didn't say... this thing's coming out in March or something. Then
I did not notice the date, so I will not pick that one. Then I will pick. Oh, geez. Assassin's Creed Odyssey, just because I love that period in history. I guess.
Nice. Okay. Sure. Cool. See, I like to do this because it's like it's real talk, right?
Yeah.
So for me, I'm gonna pick Assassin's Creed Odyssey, Anthem, and Division 2, and I don't know how I'm going to play both of those games a month apart from each other, but I will find a way. And then of course my alternate will most likely be Forza Horizon 4, because as soon as Matt goes, I'm online playing Forza Horizon 4, I will buy it and start also playing 2. So
oh man, I'm going to be playing that game through the birth of my child.
Yeah, you are.
That first month is like prime game time, by the way. Like,
I'm gonna show up. No, I'm showing up to the hospital and plugging it into the TV and just hanging out. Hey, Melissa, don't worry about this thing.
I watched the entire first season of S.H.I.E.L.D. on mute in the hospital.
Amazing.
True story.
Amazing. Little baby Forza. Yeah. It'll be great.
With subtitles.
Yeah. Forza subtitles. Karen.
All right, cool. Well, that was
thank
fun.
Thank you guys for listening to episode 309 of the Rated NA podcast. I'm glad we got the whole gang together, and thank you for your patience with all of us. We have busy lives with chitlins and stuff running around, so it's hard. You can find us on social media, and that's at Nerd Appropriate on Twitter. We, of course, are /Nerd Appropriate on Facebook. You can email us directly, and that is Matt, Ash, or Scott at nerdappropriate.com or nerds@nerdappropriate.com. And we'll be back next week with an all-new show.
That's right.
Yeah.
Let's not take a break.
Okay.
No. Let's just keep this train going.
No, that's sleep fine. Till.